sporting world, what is up? It is your boy, Gorgeous Gray, kicking it on the brutal, honest truth. You know how we do it. Thursdays, 2 to 3 on KSFS. That's KSFS at San Francisco State, once per hour, KSFSradio.org. Area code 415-338-1532, 415-338-1532. Call in, show your boy some love. I'm all about talking for a full hour, but it goes a lot better when we got some phone calls. So this is the KSFS home of boxing, mixed martial arts, and the Oakland Raiders. So you know, oh brother, you know that I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to touch on the Oakland Raiders game that happened on Monday, which I did predict last week was going to be an upset. I did predict that was going to be a win. Kind of close, not quite there. We're going to touch on to that in a quick second. But yeah, that was kind of disappointing. Also, the other game I predicted, I had Buffalo was going to be a big upset. Once again, that was very close, but not quite there. But so for a little more break, oh, perfect. This is the way it started. Caller, you are on the air.
Yeah,
what's up, caller? All right, caller hung up. We're not worried about it. That's perfectly fine. Like I was saying, so we're talking about the Oakland Raiders. The biggest storyline for the Oakland Raiders for this week, the first game of the year, is just more of the same of last year. They couldn't do it in the fourth quarter. That's what I really don't understand. They're a first-half team, and the defense played so good, so phenomenal. Seymour was such a very, very good asset, a good addition to that team. They were able to run him at different looks. They were able to get him all across the line. And so many different looks. The defense wasn't really ready for it. He helped out the whole defense. And we're going to try this call one more time. Caller, you're on the air with Gorgeous Greg and the Brutal Honest Truth.
I'm calling to say that guy sucks.
That guy sucks? Who's that guy? Jamarcus Russell?
The big guy that was the quarterback.
Yeah, Jamarcus Russell. Are you saying he's a bust?
He's a bust. He sucks so badly. I don't even know why they even chose him.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you say that because we're not really sure why they chose him. I guess he was the best option for the Raiders at that time. I was very adamant about them trading down for it. What else you want to touch on about Jamarcus Russell, or do you just want to say he was a bust, caller?
He was a bust, and he's too big to be a quarterback. And I don't care that he moves fast. He still sucks. Like, I told you that.
You told me that. Okay, well, thank you, caller, very much. We'll talk
to
you later.
Oh, say hi to Joey.
I don't think he's listening, but okay, I will. All right, thank you, caller. All right, you got to love the callers over here. Jamarcus Russell, is he a bust? Man, a lot of people are going to say that, and the way he was passing this past week, it's very easy to say, yeah, he might be. But I'm not signing off on Jamarcus Russell yet. Everybody's so quick to say, oh, Russell's a bust, Russell's done, and he played outright horrendous. And it's like the one pass he did make for the touchdown was – like, not that special. There was no defense at all. He just had to throw it up there. The worst part for Russell was he was just so inaccurate. He's got the arm, but how can you really teach accuracy? Steve Young was one of the commentators for TV for that game, and he was saying you can't really teach accuracy. You can only teach about planting your feet, and I hope they can find a way to teach Jamarcus Russell some accuracy, because if he could just harness it, that'd really help him get better. He's in his third year. Realistically, it's his second year, but still, you got to start getting results by your third year. But there is some good news for Jamarcus Russell. He has possibly the best trio of running backs in the NFL today. He's got Michael Bush, Darren McFadden, and Justin Fargas didn't even play in the game on Sunday. Imagine if he was there, and they dominated, absolutely dominated the defense with their run game. So Russell just has to dump it out to his stud, and I mean super studs of running backs, his trio back there, his killer trio, and the best receiver on the team, that is Zach Miller coming out of Arizona State. You have to love Zach Miller. He led the team in receptions last year. He's definitely got the best hands. And they always say a quarterback's best friend is a tight end with good hands. He's got great hands. He's solid. He can block on the line. He is possibly the best player on the Raiders offense. That's not a running back. You got to love Zach Miller. You got to love his effort. You got to love the way he played. Let me see what else we got from the offense. The offensive line of the Oakland Raiders. I got to clap for that because they were atrocious. For the last 5 years, they have been absolutely atrocious, more atrocious than Beyonce's weave. It was just plain bad. But you know what? They stepped up. They dominated a fairly strong San Diego Chargers defensive line. They really controlled the pace of the game. Cornell Green, he's got like two very, very costly penalties that took him out of a field goal position. That was really a heartbreaker, but you know, same old story for the Raiders. They got it. They got to work on the penalties. They got to stay. They got to stay responsible. They got to keep a hold on the penalties, lock it down. But very, very improved, very good offensive line. Robert Gallery, he's definitely wasn't worth a second round pick, but you already got him. You already paid for him. He looks to be pretty good over at left guard. He seems to be like in a good place over there. Generally, the offense, they're doing okay. Just because they got a good old line, they got a good running game, but you need to have two dimensions. You cannot be a one-dimension team in the NFL today. I don't think you ever could in the NFL be just a running team. They got to work it out to the wide receivers. You got to get some accuracy for your quarterback. And since we're talking about the offense, we have got to talk about the touchdown that got reviewed and taken away that I know there's a lot of he said, she said, Monday morning quarterback, but had that touchdown gone through, possibly the score might have been a tie, or it could have taken the momentum in a totally different way. So the whole thing was is that the receiver caught the ball, and they claimed that he didn't have full control of it as his hand hit the ground. I knew people who were at the game, and the people at the game, they said that, you know, he didn't have full possession of it. I wasn't at the game. I was at home with my HDTV, and my HDTV showed me the ball may have moved a little bit, but he had both feet, and they say you have to hold all the way down. He had both feet and his knee down before it started to move. And when it did move, his hand was underneath the ball. The ball didn't hit and the ball came out after it hit the ground. I could be wrong, but I thought that when a ball is fumbled by the cause of the ground, that is when the ball hits the ground and pops out, that is not a fumble. The quarterback was down. The ground cannot caused the ball to come out. It's really unfortunate. They got robbed on that touchdown. I'm not going to say anything about conspiracies about receivers, about referees having it out for the Oakland Raiders. I don't believe that at all. I think that the referees just made an absolutely horrible call. Horrible call. And then back on the defense, you got to love Chris Johnson, the second cornerback. I mean, Nnamdi Asamoah, they didn't really say his name all game, which is a good thing, because when they don't call a cornerback's name, you know he's doing something right. Hyrum Eugene, he was doing okay. And then, forgot his name. Well, we ain't worried about it. My Huff, thank you. We saw the Michael Huff sighting. He came out and made a couple big hits. They drafted him over seven overall pick a couple years ago. I don't think he was worth that high, but whatever, they took him. He's starting to show a little something. Nnamdi Asamoah is a stud. He had a busted wrist, but he still played anyways. Chris Johnson was locking it down. A big problem I noticed for the linebackers was their coverage, or I should say lack of coverage, in the fourth quarter. I am not a defensive coordinator, but I can tell you this. If you drop your linebackers beyond the first down marker, that's easy to dump out to the inside. And on that final drive for the San Diego Chargers, they got two very good, very long, dumping to the middle of the field passes. And it's really unfortunate because had the linebackers not played off so far, if they were playing not like right in front of the sticks, if they were in front of the first down marker, that would have been at least a way to try to clamp down on it, not let them break it out so big. That was really a heartbreaker, but then again, that is the story of the Raiders. Unfortunately, they just cannot get it done in the fourth quarter. Now to the Chargers. How disappointing were the Chargers and LaDainian Tomlinson? LaDainian Tomlinson said this was his comeback year. This was going to be the year where he was going to be a new man, and he was just going to just take it over, let everybody know he's 30 years old. He's not old. He's not done. But he did not look good. And Darren Sproles is a beast. He's only 5'7", but we all know he's a beast. We all knew he was a beast back when he was over at K-State. We know he's a really good running back. Definitely carrying it, getting it done. But Phillip Rivers, until that fourth quarter, he was looking bad, really bad. And that is definitely a testament to the defensive line, which looked very, very good, which is really interesting because Seymour is just one man. Richard Seymour is just one man. and he has brought so much to that defensive line. They were able to run him in multiple looks at both ends, both tackles. Tommy Kelly was getting in there. Greg Ellis is 142 years old. He even got in there and started breaking up some plays, breaking up some passes. The defensive line was outstanding. So how we got to give it a grade? I definitely got to give it probably a C-minus performance. They looked very good. They couldn't pull out the win. The Raiders have got to, and I mean have got to, find some way to close out those fourth quarter games. Last year, there were many games where the Raiders had the lead at halftime, and the last drive of the opponent in the fourth quarter is where they would score and they would take the lead. And the offense is just too weak to do anything about it. Very, very much a heartbreaker for Oakland Raiders and the Raider Nation. This is the home of the Raiders boxing mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts a little bit quiet right now, but boxing, we have got the mega fight upcoming, and it's a really good fight because there's so many different levels that this fight is so important. It's so immense. It's so great. How it's going to shape the welterweight division, how it's going to shape boxing in the immediate future. It's very exciting. So before I get into that, I just want to do a quick recap of what happened in this past week with the NFL. So big headlines. Let's start with Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. Drew Brees got six touchdowns. Granted, the Texans were playing horrible. The defensive backs, the Texans were not doing... Drew Brees tore it up. Bang, and he was playing the Lions, so what do you expect? Six touchdowns, you gotta love that. Houston, when the Texans playing, they didn't play a very good game. The Jets came out. Mark Sanchez really showed maybe he just might have what it takes to be a starting quarterback, a good quarterback in the NFL today. And then Denver. This one just killed me. I had a pool where I was set. All I needed to was I just needed Denver to lose, and I was set because what do you expect? Denver, Cincinnati, Carson Palmer's back. Man, it's really, really a testament to how bad the Bengals really are. They weren't able to do anything. Ocho Cinco wasn't able to do anything. Carson Palmer was the most disappointing. You know, he's coming off being hurt. He's ready to take over. He's ready to return back to his form that he once was. He was once one of the best, hottest up-and-coming quarterbacks in the league. He got hurt. He's just disappeared. We did not have a Carson Palmer sighting. That was very, very disappointed. And Denver just got a lucky tip. I mean, almost as bad as the Immaculate Reception. You know, it was just Stokely was there, caught it. It's really, really unfortunate. But whatever, a win's a win's a win. It is the AFC West. It's a horrible division. I still don't see the Broncos going very far. But good for them, I guess. And then you got over Carolina and Philadelphia. Jake Delhomme threw four picks and had a fumble. Yeah, that's not very good. So that's two consecutive games where he has just played horrendous. That was the NFC Championship game, and then this game. And they took him out. He didn't even play in the second half. That's how bad he did. Really sad, really unfortunate. But like I said, this broadcaster, Gorgeous Greg, said last week, he is old. He's 34 years old. Does he still have it? Maybe he doesn't. And the rest of the Panthers just around him, they weren't able to help get it done. But I directly give that, blame that on Jake Delhomme. He needed to find a way to make it done, get it done, and throwing poor picks and a fumble, that's definitely not getting it done. Now, everybody's talking about Michael Vick. Michael Vick, he's definitely one of the top headlines, the top news stories out there. Michael Vick is officially on the roster. They dropped Hank Baskett so they could bring him in. He is on the roster, and McNabb is hurt. Vic cannot play until the third week. However, Don McNabb is hurt. He said he hurt his leg, but he's been working, and he's still questionable right now. We don't know if he's going to play or not. If he doesn't, we'll just have to really wait and see. We don't know how that bad boy is going to roll out. And then we got Brett Favre, who I said last week, and I stand by, is too old and he shouldn't have come back. He had a decent game. He had an okay game. But we all know that the only reason he did so good was because he's got Adrian Peterson in the backfield. He's a beast, hands down. He's got to be the best running back in the league. I don't think anybody will disagree with that. You got to love Adrian Peterson. You got to love what he does. You got to love how he rolls, how he does it. I mean, Brett Favre looked a little rusty. He was, you know, he did get some solid completions. But Adrian Peterson, 180 yards and 3 touchdowns in the very first week, that really is a testament to how good and how talented that young man is. I say young even though he's actually older than me, but you know what I'm talking about. And Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts, they were playing the Jaguars. They were playing the Jaguars of Jacksonville. And I really thought that the Colts were really going to bust out and the Colts were going to have just a dominating game. I was actually surprised in how good the Jaguars played. They played solid defense. They were doing okay on the offensive side. David Garrard was playing pretty good. Peyton Manning decided to step it up in the second half. He got 301 yards, only 1 touchdown, which is interesting enough. But, you know, he got enough to get the win, and that's the important part. And then you got the Cowboys in Tampa Bay. Tony Romo had a career best, 3 touchdowns, 353 yards. So congratulations to him. But let's face it, the defensive backs in Tampa Bay, that's right, they ain't got nothing. There ain't nothing there, and there ain't nobody. So that really is a shame. But whatever, good for him. He got a career best, and he's going to be looking forward to playing the Giants this week. I'll touch on that in just a second. And then on the other side of the ball, Byron Leftwich. Now everybody, I forgot about him coming out of Marshall. I thought, remember, he was the franchise quarterback for the Jaguars, and man, he fell off the map. Or did he? He came back and got 276 passing yards, so you got to like that for, I guess he's not young anymore, but he was once considered young, not really playing too hot. And since we are in San Francisco, we got to talk about the 49ers. I don't really like it either, but we'll talk about it. I'm not one to hate. The 49ers, they got the upset. Nothing against them. A win is a win. However, they didn't play a very solid game. They were outgained by the Cardinals by 96 yards. So the Cardinals had 96 more all-purpose offensive yards than the Niners, and they still got the loss. The real story of this game has got to be the Cardinals' offense, or I should say lack thereof. Kurt Warner did not look comfortable in the pocket. Anquan Boldin and Larry Fitzgerald were not playing as good as they should. And the running game, still the same as last year during the regular season. They were dead last. And I mean dead last. Of all 32 teams, they were ranked 32nd in rushing yards per game last year. And it definitely showed when they couldn't do anything. But then again, if you're talking about their offense, you got to talk about the Niners defense. And Patrick Willis, what a beast. You got to love him at middle linebacker, the anchor, the captain of your team. He was definitely playing solid. On the cornerbacks, did the cornerbacks shut down the wide receivers? Were the wide receivers just not playing? I think it really depends. You know, it could be like glasses half full, half empty. You could see it either way. The Niners got the win in the AFC West. Excuse me, NFC West. So good for them. A win's a win. And then we got the Seattle Seahawks, who I said last week, I'll say today, and I'll keep on saying, are going to be the breakout team hitting the map this year in the NFL. They have Julius Jones, who was really, really solid when he was in Dallas. He got 117 yards, which is nothing to shake a stick at. No Adrian Peterson, but it's nothing to shake a stick at. Julius Jones was solid. Matt Hasselbeck is back. They got Hushmanzada. They got Deion Branch. Their defense is playing good. Pat Kearney is back and healthy. You really have to enjoy that. Definitely, I see the Seahawks going a lot of places this year. And then the Giants and Eli Manning. This just shows how good the Giants club, the Giants organization is. Eli Manning does not have that one superstar wide receiver. And I've heard many people say that if you don't have that wide receiver, then you can't make it to the championship. You're not going to be able to make it if you don't have that superstar wide receiver. And you know what? He doesn't need that superstar wide receiver. He has enough of a team. He's got Kevin Boss at tight end, who's just a monster. He's got a solid core of people around him that he does not need one single receiver. He distributes the ball to everybody and does a very good job of that. And Justin Tuck is starting to come out and warm up again like I said he would. I know he's going to have a breakout year this year. Definitely the Giants should definitely be considered for a possible Super Bowl game, maybe even Super Bowl champions. I'm not going that far, but they might. And then the big Sunday night game. I think it was like the 200th meeting of the Packers and the Bears. I'm not sure what it was, but it's supposed to be historical. A tough bit of rivalry in the NFC North. It was definitely a very, very entertaining game. One of the things you really got to remember, you got about that game was that fake field goal that the Bears tried to run. Now, upon review, when we were watching the replays, because I wasn't over in Lambeau Field when I was watching TV, it looked like you could see the lineman was calling the check down. So it seemed like maybe he thought there were too many men on the field, just wanted to rush out there so they could get the penalty. Turned out to be very, very bad, bad decision. Excuse me, I said fake field goal. I meant to say fake punt. So my apologies on that one. And so the Bears, bad call on the fake field goal. If you're talking about the Bears, you definitely got to remember you got Aaron Rodgers on the other side. Aaron Rodgers looking very solid. He is going to be a very good quarterback. I have total faith in him. And he really couldn't find his comfortable. He couldn't get comfortable in the pocket, but he was able to make it work. And in that final touchdown that he threw, he looked very good. He stayed in the pocket. The pocket was collapsing around him. He stayed composed, and he delivered that pass and made a good solid pass and got the touchdown. So kudos to Aaron Rodgers and for the Green Bay Packers. Now, the big news headline from this game, well, first, Brian Urlacher is going to be out for the year. So, yeah, that's I don't know if it's just in, but that's definitely semi-breaking, if not breaking. Brian Urlacher is going to be out for the year. So it's going to leave a hole at middle linebacker, and looks like they could use some help over at the linebacking core because Lansbury is good, but he's not as good as well, as Urlacher, who is really almost showing that he's getting really the injury bug right now because it's been the last couple of years he keeps getting hurt. But the bigger story for the Bears, I mean, that is a huge story, is Cutler. And you got to talk about the quarterback Cutler because he threw four picks, and he was 17 for 36 incompletions. Now, Jay Cutler was in a good program. He was in that Shanahan offense. And Shanahan's always, you know, he knows how to make good running backs, and that always frees up. He knows how to have a good running game that always frees up the wide receivers and let the quarterbacks be successful. Jay Cutler is supposed to be the face of this franchise. Jay Cutler threw four picks, 17 for 36. That is not the numbers of a franchise quarterback. And the Packers defensive backs, Charles Woodson, I'm calling him out. He's too old. Al Harris is also pretty old, but at least Al Harris still semi has it. But the defensive backs of the Packers were definitely locking it down and getting it busy and making it done. And the big story about Jay Cutler was his bad composure in the pocket. And he's been in the league for, I believe, about 3 years now. 3 years now. And you would think that he learned by now, when you're running out of the pocket, don't throw across your body. He would run to the right side trying to find somebody open, and he would try to throw across his body to the middle of the field. And three times that got picked. If he'd have just kept on rolling, he was already outside of the tackle box. He just had to throw it out of bounds, and he could have got an incomplete pass, and they could have resetted it. So that really was a shame. But then again, I never liked Jay Cutler, so I'm not really worried about it. Last week, I also, my big prediction, as I said, was the Raider upset. Also, I predicted the Buffalo Bills to upset the Patriots, which really kind of, I'm really disappointed because they were really close to getting it done. I think they still could get it done. They could still do a lot of damage in the AFC East. I think they're a good team. I think they're going to be a very good team in the AFC East. But they weren't able to hold on in the end. The Pats, Tom Brady, it was 39 for 53. 53 passes. My goodness. I can't even imagine throwing 53 passes. That is just beastly. He got 378 yards and two touchdowns. And the Bills were in it all the way until the fourth quarter when they just couldn't stop Tom Brady. And they couldn't stop the Patriots. So we talked about the Raiders in San Diego already, and that's going to wrap it up for the NFL this week. This past week, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to take a quick break. And I'm going to come on back. We're going to keep on rolling with some boxing. Definitely going to touch into some of the NFL games, NCAA college season, football season coming up. Don't forget UFC hung on for a close win over Ohio State. I'll be back. Hot boys, flip up my whole clique, ride. Get shot, boy, that's how it go. We straight do or die. We checkmate whole niggas, then come with your mama, live back and kickin' the dough, nigga. Let's get this shit crackling.
My probation officers don't know what happened. Stay out the way, I'm HOT and about that action. Boot it up with them slugs and face masks and camouflage fashion. I'm all about that luxury. I'm also about putting 50 in your head, boy. If you thinking about fucking me, I'm gonna be here for a minute.
What else?
You gotta respect it.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of niggas out here getting killed, except it.
Freezer burn platinum on my pinky.
Look at me.
Squatting 20-inch Twinkies.
Look at me.
I'm like that. It's like that.
What?
I'm like that. It's like that.
Look at me.
Freezer burn platinum on my pinky.
Look at me.
Squatting 20-inch Twinkies.
Look at me.
I'm like that. It's like that.
What?
I'm like that. It's like that.
Look at me.
Charlie Hustle loaded in the fast lane, driving slow. With a case of tall cans and some broccoli and a bad ass hoe. Squatting four times, get a go, zenith, wise, and four. Bouncing up and down, right next to me is the cop from the Bronx. Sound system on, blue, blam, blam. Bumping on the doobie, almost grub, dang it, burnt in my lap. Smoking trees with the window up. Traffic backed up, middle finger.
I don't associate, I surround myself with CIs, confidential informants, snitches, affidavits, smooth bitches, marks, simple Simon, sucker, sap, simps. I be kicking it real tough with the PIs, hustlers, cycles, gangsters, killers that might not even look like with trophies up under their shelf, skyballers, all kind of pants. Player type individuals, thugged out 100,000 years, nigga rich, nigga rose, lieutenants, bosses, gazillionaires, new millennium wallers, high rollers, well as hootin' thugs, house parties, strip joints, gambling stacks, and old little wall clubs.
Freezer burn platinum on my pinky.
Look at me.
Squatting 20-inch Twinkies.
Look at me.
I'm like that. It's like that.
What?
I'm like that. It's like that.
Look at me.
Freezer burn platinum on my pinky.
Look at me.
Squatting 20-inch.
Yeah, that's right. You are listening to the Brutal Honest Truth with your boy, Gorgeous Greg. Call in, show your boy some love. 415-338-1532. KSFSradio.org. Show your boy some love. Call in. I'm ready to kick around anything. Sports, life, everything in between. That's how we roll on the Brutal Honest Truth. Definitely, you like what you're hearing. Even if you don't like what you're hearing, you got to check it out anyways. Check out the webpage, Kendall Sports, K-E-N-D-A-L-L, sports.blogspot.com. Always taking emails to kendall.sports.productions@gmail.com. We are on Twitter. Just search for Kendall Sports, all one word, all lowercase. And don't forget Facebook, kendall.sports.productions@gmail.com. We just updated it for the boxing, the big boxing match this weekend, which I'm going to touch on right now. You know, everybody's talking about Mayweather-Marquez, and rightfully they show, so they should be. It's going to be a great fight. It's going to be an outstanding fight. Might be a little bit boring, but, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see how that bad boy rolls. But what's really interesting about that night is some of the undercard fights that might get looked over. Vicente Escobedo is going to be fighting against Michael Katsidis. Now, Katsidis had two really tough losses. One, he lost to, this is on his upcoming, when he was looking good, looking hot, going to be the best out there. He was, he fought Joel Casamayor, knocked Casamayor down, but ended up getting knocked out in the 10th round. So Michael Katsidis had that loss. In his next fight, he fought another very good opponent in Juan Diaz. And he fought Juan Diaz. Once again, he didn't get knocked out, but he got the TKO, and he looked like he got dominated pretty badly, and a lot of people were kind of writing him off. They said that he was done. They said that Michael Katsidis didn't have it, and sure enough, he came his next fight, which I don't recall right now. He did win that fight. I'm going to pull that bad boy up right now. Michael Katsidis did pull out a win in that fight, and he is going to be fighting, like I said, Vincent Escobedo. Let me pull that up really quick. I'm going to get that fight he had. All right, Jesus Chavez. There we go. So he lost to Juan Diaz, and then he beat Angel Ramirez, and then he beat Jesus Chavez back in April. Coming off of, he got a TKO win, looked very solid in that. It could have been a KO because he just caught him with a killer left hook that just dropped him. Easily could have gotten a KO, but of course the rep stopped it. So yeah, he's fighting Vicente Escobedo. This is for some title. I don't even know what it is. Escobedo just beat Kevin Kelly over in Sacramento last May. Carlos Hernandez, he hasn't fought a lot of really hot, solid fighters. I definitely see Katsidis is going to dominate this fight. I think it's going to be a unanimous decision, but it's definitely going to be a very, very entertaining fight. And then we got Chris John and Rocky Juarez too. Now, if anybody remembers Chris John, Rocky Juarez won back in February. I believe it was on the undercard for Marquez Diaz. It was a very, good close fight, ended up in a draw. So you knew that there was definitely going to be a rematch on this. Now, Chris John, that was his first fight coming over to the U.S. He did fight Juan Manuel Marquez back in 2007, Marquez went over to Indonesia. My apologies, went over to Indonesia, and he lost a unanimous decision. It could have gone either way, whatever. It's all moot point now. But no, Rocky Juarez is going to be stepping in the ring with Chris John. It was a very good fight. This should be another good fight. And Rocky Juarez, he's definitely looking to – he's on the up and coming. He did lose to Juan Manuel Marquez back in November, but again, so is a lot of people. He did just beat Jorge Rodrigo Barrios. He actually knocked – He actually hit him with a left hook when Barrios was kind of had his mouth open and cut open his cheek, which is really cool but kind of nasty at the same time. Because if you look at it, like, it was just bleeding. It was like a chunk of meat just hanging there. Really graphic, but a good fight. And he ended up getting that win. And then he got the draw against Chris John, who he's going to fight again this weekend. That's going to be a very good fight. So just because of the main event, don't forget to skip. Do not skip the undercard fights. And now the moment we've all been waiting for. Mayweather and Marquez, the fight itself. Now, a lot could be said either way. I'm just going to start out like this. Floyd Mayweather, when he left, was on the top of fighting, and rightfully so. He was ranked number one in the world, very much rightfully so. He had beaten everybody. However, his last couple fights before he retired were not, the most entertaining. I take it back, because when he fought Ricky Hatton, he made Ricky Hatton jump up in weight class, and this was his last fight back in December of 2007. That was right before he retired, and he got a knockout of Ricky Hatton. It was really good for him, really shocking how he just dominated that fight, because he didn't really dominate. He just sort of just wait as soon as Hatton would bull in, just like Ricky Hatton likes to do. He would just throw a quick little 1-2, and then he'd cover up. And whenever Hatton would try to get on the inside, Mayweather threw up his block, which was good defense. He ended up getting the win. But if you look at Manny Pacquiao, when Pacquiao fought Ricky Hatton, he did the similar thing, but he did a different angle. He just kept, instead of letting him come in, throwing a couple quick combination and then blocking, he would just move to the side and keep on firing at him. So Pacquiao definitely revealed that Mayweather's victory over Hatton was still a victory, and a win is a win. Don't get me wrong, it is a win, but it was not as impressive as it was, as a lot of people saw it. And then if you go back to the Mayweather De La Hoya snore fest, waste of time, this fight, now this was the problem. This fight was hyped up by too many people. In the whole fight, Mayweather was just running backwards, and De La Hoya was trying to trace him down, and De La Hoya was not looking good at all. After that, De La Hoya then, he fought Pacquiao, and we all know how that ended up. Ugh, and that was really bad. So Mayweather's last, and before that, I believe he beat Carlos Baldomir for one of the titles. Carlos Baldomir, he basically just danced around and got an easy victory. So Mayweather hasn't really been through a lot of grinding fights, like we all remember him and Zab Judah, but he hasn't really had those, and Diego Corrales, he hasn't had those grinding long fights where he really gets to showcase his true skill. He's sort of just been more defensive, more technical, more sort of dancing around and not really getting hit, which is fine, because whoever you get a victory, that's the important part. You got to get that win. And then you look on the other side. He retired. He went to do WrestleMania. He went out. He started doing AT&T commercials, doing his thing. We all knew he was coming back. Why he retired, I don't know. There's a lot of conspiracies, a lot of ideas out there. But he retired, and he's back now, and he chose Juan Manuel Marquez as a tune-up fight. He and I guess the Fairweather fans of the world, the so-called boxing fans, the people who don't really understand, don't really like boxing as a whole, just sort of like just watch the main fights, don't really pay attention to it. They all want to see him and Pacquiao. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit later when I get more on that. And on the other side of the other corner, we got Juan Manuel Marquez. My opinion, is the number one fighter in the world. If Mayweather hadn't retired, I'd say he's number one. But once you leave, you gotta fight to get your way back. So Manuel Marquez is the number one fighter in the world, rightfully so. He has been destroying everybody who he steps into the ring with. He did get the two losses to Manny Pacquiao. Yeah, we all know how it goes. So the one draw and then the second loss. And they weren't able to get the third fight scheduled for whatever reason. Basically, a lot of people say it's because Pacquiao's ducking Marquez. I don't know about that, but that never that fight never happened. Marquez got a very solid KO win over Juan Diaz. However, Juan Diaz got beat by Paulie Malignaggi. And Paulie Malignaggi, I'm going to say this, is definitely not one of the top fighters out there. Malignaggi did not get the win, but if you look at the fight, he looked like he was dominating the fight pretty much. So Juan Diaz was very good, and he looked very solid in that fight until Marquez really took it over and got the win. But maybe we're hyping up Juan Diaz as a better fighter than he actually is. And before that, Marquez got a great, great knockout over Joel Casamayor. And that was very good, very entertaining. And a lot of people who see the Marquez fights, they don't really understand his style. His style, he's a defensive kind of guy, and he always takes three rounds to understand his opponents. Every single fight that I have seen, I've seen a lot of them, I've watched them on YouTube, I've been looking them up, every single one of JM Marquez's fights, he has starts out the first three rounds looking like he's going to lose. And then he steps up, turns it on, and totally dominates the fight. Now, right now, a lot of people are thinking about Juan Manuel Marquez as the guy who drinks his own urine, because I didn't see it, but it was on the HBO 24/7. He drank his own urine. He claims that his body is releasing nutrients and vitamins or whatever, and he needs to recycle it. Whatever. If that's what he wants to do, fine. If that's what he's been doing for his fighting career, I say keep on going, because there's a reason he's such a good fighter. And if it's drinking your own urine, then I'm not going to say I'm going to start doing it, but if you want to drink your own urine, fine. Go ahead, drink your own urine. If it helps you win, then it's definitely going to help you win, and maybe it will. But among this, you got to remember he is definitely a very solid fighter, a strong fighter, a defensive fighter. Some of the real boxing enthusiasts understand they think that this fight might be a little bit slow. It might start out that way because Mayweather's not a very offensive fighter. Marquez, he can be offensive, but he definitely starts out slow. So it might be a little slower paced fight than a lot of people are expecting. So do be prepared for that. That should happen. But I'm calling you out, Floyd Mayweather. I'm talking to you right now, Floyd Mayweather Jr. If you want to win, if you want to beat Juan Manuel Marquez, there's one thing you got to do. He has got to jump out on Marquez early, absolutely dominate. Just let Marquez know his power, dominate in the early rounds. If he gets those first three rounds and absolutely dominates and just puts all the pressure and lays down the hammer on Juan Manuel Marquez, I believe that's going to be enough for him to get the win. Now, he could just hang back, dance around, not do anything, and skate his way to a victory. I hope that doesn't happen. It might happen. And he could easily win that way, because I think he would sway the votes of a lot of judges, and I really hope that doesn't happen. Now, Marquez, on the other hand, Marquez is going to do what he does and what he's the best in the world at, and that's ring generalship. What he does is he gets hit the first three rounds, he identifies, he understands the weaknesses of his opponent, and then he exploits them. That's why he's been so successful, and that's why he's really good right now, and that's why he's going to have a very good fight against Mayweather this weekend. So, of course, you want to get the gorgeous Greg prediction. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm giving the gorgeous guarantee. I'm going with the upset. I'm going with my man, my personal number one pound-for-pound champion. I got Juan Manuel Marquez squeezing out a tough split decision victory over Floyd Mayweather Jr. Now, I'm just going to interject this for a second because it's easy to predict before the fight starts. It's a lot more telling if you wait until the fight starts. So when we came to the come up of Ricky Hatton and Manny Pacquiao, I felt that Ricky Hatton might have edged it out, but I was pretty confident that Pacquiao was going to win. But I thought he was going to win the decision. I thought he was going to go the go the distance, but apparently not. As soon as he came out in that first round and started just charging in his typical bull style, just laying up the punches, I knew right then. I started texting, I started tweeting everybody. I said this fight is not going to last long, and it did not last long. So I do have Juan Manuel Marquez squeezing out a very tight split decision. However, if Floyd Mayweather jumps on Marquez enough in those first three rounds, then Mayweather will definitely get the victory. And my only hope about this fight is please, please do not just dance around and wait for the other guy to throw a punch, because that is going to be boring. And if that does happen, at least we got two great fights on the undercard. So this is The Brutal Honest Truth with Gorgeous Greg. I am going to go ahead and take myself a quick break, and then we're going to go ahead. We're going to be wrapping it up. Definitely going to talk about some of the upcoming stuff, and I'm definitely going to touch on the 168-pound boxing tournament with the Oakland's own Andre Ward getting a victory, and he's coming to fight in Oakland November 21st. That's going to be a very good fight. I'm going to be there like I was there when he fought S. Miranda back in April. Got to show love to the hometown hero, and I'm going to take a break. I'll be right back. With the Brutal Honest Truth. I am Gorgeous Greg. The phone numbers, as always, are open. 415-338-1532. Definitely want to check it out. Call in. That's what keeps the show rolling. I'm all about talking for an hour, but it'd be nice to get some people to call in so we can vary it up a little bit. So what I'm going to do before we hop on the upcoming games, before we hop on the upcoming college football games and NFL games, I'm going to touch on this the 168-pound super middleweight boxing tournament that Showtime is doing, or Showtime is broadcasting, I should say. When they came out with the idea, I thought it'd be a great idea. It's looking to be a great idea, and so far it's pretty good, except that all the big-time contenders are finding a bunch of hacks. You got, like I said, Andre Ward, Oakland's own, the only gold medalist from the 2004 Olympics on the boxing team for the United States. Good job for him. He got a TKO in the third round over Shelby Pudwill. That's right. I ain't heard of him either. And he should be fighting on November 21st, another guy who I think is definitely one of the top in the world at 168. And on November 21st at the Oracle Arena, he's going to be fighting Mikkel Kessler, the Viking warrior, who beat Guzmir Perdomo, and he got a KO in the fourth round. Now, this is going to be a very good, very, very entertaining fight coming up in November. I'm going to get on it a little more then, just to talk a little bit about the fighters. At the last fight I saw where Andre Ward was over in Oakland when he fought Edson Miranda, I thought Andre Ward got a win, although I was a little bit disappointed. He was okay, he was there, but he was not championship caliber. He couldn't take over the fight like he really needed to do if he wants to be a champion. He fought very good. He got a win against a very tough fighter, but he didn't look like a champion. Now, Mikkel Kessler, on the other hand, had an undefeated record before he faced Joe Calzaghe, who retired undefeated. Before he fought Joe Calzaghe, he was undefeated. He is probably one of the more probably the most powerful fighter at 168 pounds. The only thing about him He's a European fighter. He's very vertical. He's very up and down. He's very back and forth. It's pretty easy. If you can, you know, take the shots, you just got to step to the side. You got to give him more angles. Basically, it's the perfect fighter for an American fighter to fight because, you know, we can definitely get some more angle work on, not just up and down, back and forth. So that's how Joe Calzaghe was able to beat Mikkel Kessler, and that's how Andre Ward should be able to beat Mikkel Kessler, although this is definitely going to be Andre Ward's toughest fight of his career. And also some other fighters, just for the record, who are going to be in that 168-pound tournament. We got Arthur Abraham coming out of Germany. He's definitely he's been one of the top middleweights for a while. I guess he's jumping up to 168 from 160. Alan Green's going to be in it. Another U.S. Olympian, Andre Durrell, Jermaine Taylor. He's trying to stay in it. Is he still in? I don't know. He just lost to Carl Froch, but he might be able to come back. And then the one I just mentioned, Carl Froch. He's in this also. He's the regarded by some as the champion. It's kind of hard to have one champion in the 168-pound division right now, just because there's a lot of belts, there's a lot of people out there, a lot of possible contenders. And we've been talking boxing, of course. We've been talking basketball. We're talking football. Just to drop a little basketball knowledge out there, Desmond Mason is looking to sign with the Sacramento Kings, which would be good because the Kings could use definitely some use of three guard. That'd be very nice for him if they had a good solid three. Maybe Desmond Mason will end up there. The former 2001 slam dunk champion might be able to do some up in Sacramento because Sacramento is hurting. Yeah, they really are hurting. And I'm really looking forward to when the NBA season starts. I love football, and I'm so happy, so grateful that football is back. But I'm ready for basketball. I'm ready for the hoops to start. That is exactly what I am ready and what I am wanting is for the NBA season to kick off and come on back. Now for college football. There's always so many games coming up in the college football week, which is good because you definitely get a lot of variety. Even if you don't subscribe to one of those cable packages where you get every single game, it's good to, you know, you got a lot of options. So instead of talking about all the games out there, I'm just going to talk about a couple games which are definite must-sees. Now, the two games I'm picking out this week as the must-sees actually played against each other in week one, and it was on this show where my guest Peter G said that Miami was going to beat Florida State, and they did. And these two teams are going to be playing. Florida State is going to be playing BYU. Now, BYU, they tore up Oklahoma the first week, and they really made a headline, made themselves known. A lot of people were really excited about BYU because they were playing an absolutely garbage joke of a conference in the Mountain West. Even though my Wyoming Cowboys are in that conference, you know, it really is not a really good conference. BYU is going to be playing Florida State, who still has that close loss, that bitter defeat in their mouth, that taste left in their mouth they got from when they lost to Miami a couple weeks ago. That is going to be a very good game. BYU is going to be in Tallahassee, and I got Florida State definitely going to step up. Not dominate, but they're going to get a close win over the Cougars of BYU. And then the other good match we got coming up is going to be the University of Miami Hurricanes are going to be playing the Ramblin' Wreck from Georgia Tech, the Yellow Jackets. And this is definitely going to be a good game. It's going to be a close game. Miami's still trying to make themselves known as the Miami that they once were. They're trying to be the great team that they once were. Are they going to do it? No. I think that the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets are going to step it up. The Yellow Jackets are going to squeeze out a tough win over in the ACC. They're going to do what it takes. They're going to do what they need to do to win, and they are going to pull out and get a tough win this weekend. So those are definitely the two games you want to watch: Florida State, BYU, and Miami and Georgia Tech. There's definitely a lot of other games out there. Yeah, if you want, but these are definitely the two that I had to spotlight. And of course, we're talking football. We got to talk about the National Football League. The first game we got today, the first game we got on the box is going to be the Houston Texans, who just got dominated by the Jets at home, are going to be in Tennessee. So you got the Houston team of now versus the Houston team of old, the Titans before they left. You got them having a Tennessee throwdown, if you will. Tennessee really shocked a lot of people, definitely shocked me on how well they played on opening night against the defending champions, the Steelers. I definitely see Tennessee's gonna get a good win in this one. The Texans are, well, they're trying to get their stuff together, trying to make it work. I don't think they're gonna be able to do it. I definitely got the Titans winning this one. And then the next game I'm gonna talk about is definitely gonna be my spotlight NFL game of the week. It's going to be Drew Brees coming off of a 6-touchdown game. It's going to be in Philadelphia against a possibly McNabb-less Philadelphia Eagles. And this is going to be a very, very entertaining game to watch. I got the Saints coming out of the NFC West, as I said before, and I will keep on saying, is going to be, NFC South, excuse me, this is going to be the breakout conference, the most powerful division in the NFL. I got both of these. This whole conference, everybody's going to be strong except for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and apparently maybe not the Panthers. But no, but they're going to be coming in, and they are going to dominate. They are going to beat the hometown Philadelphia Eagles with or without McNabb. They're still going to beat the Eagles. And up next, we got Arizona, the Cardinals, who just lost. They outgained the Niners last week, but they ended up getting the loss. They couldn't close it out in the end. They're going to be in Jacksonville against the Jaguars, who had a good first half against the Colts and then sort of just fell down by the wayside. It's going to be interesting to see who shows up from the Cardinals. Are the defensive backs of Jacksonville, are they going to be able to hold, lock down the Cardinal wide receivers as well as the Niners did? I don't think they're going to be able to. I think Arizona's going to squeeze out a close win, but Arizona's going to get the win. I'm still not sold on Kurt Warner. I think he's old. I think he needs to hang him up if they will. But then again, he can always prove me wrong. I'll be the first one to admit when I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm not. And we're going to talk about Oakland. I'm going to get on that one in a second. Cincinnati at Green Bay. Now, this is going to be a joke of a game because Green Bay is going to tear it up. I'm not even really going to talk in this game just because Green Bay is going to be so dominant in this game. You can quote me on that. Coming up next, we got Minnesota at Detroit. Now, Detroit in a transition year. Yeah, they played the Saints last week. It's not really their fault that they got embarrassed so badly. But they're going to be playing against the Vikings in the NFC North matchup. Adrian Peterson's definitely going to run all over the field. And when you run the ball, you open up the passing lanes, and Brett Favre might have a decent game for this upcoming week. And next we got the St. Louis Rams, who got blown, and I mean blown out last week against the Seattle Seahawks, are going to be in Washington, who lost to the New York Giants. Now, the Redskins, they're doing okay. They're still sort of trying to find themselves, find their identity. But the Rams are a mess. The Rams are just not good at all right now. Steven Jackson's trying to get rolling, but you got to have more than just one running back. So the Rams, you know, how the mighty have fallen. Just to think, what was it, about 6 years ago, they were the greatest show on turf. Now look at them. But that's kind of, you know, how it goes in the NFL. And next, we got an AFC East matchup. We got the New England Patriots are going to be playing the New York Jets. Now, the question is, can Mark Sanchez do against the Patriots what he did against the Texans? No, he can't. This is not going to be much of a game. The Patriots, maybe they had to shake off the ring rust for last week when they played Buffalo. I still think Buffalo was pretty good. They gave them a good opposition. But no, the Jets and Mark Sanchez are going to get dominated this week by the Patriots. You don't really need to watch that game unless you want to watch a whipping. Now, my upset of the week. This is definitely going to be a tough upset. The Carolina Panthers in Atlanta against the Falcons. Now, I'm sure you're saying, Greg, you're talking about the Falcons. You're talking about how good they are. You're talking about how great they are. And they are good. They are great. They are definitely the number two team in the NFC South behind the New Orleans Saints. But I can't explain it. I got a feeling about Carolina. I'm telling you, they're going to break out. They're going to have a solid year. They're going to do good in a tough NFC South. Carolina is going to pull out the close win against the very powerful and young and good Atlanta Falcons in the Georgia Dome. That's going to be a good game to watch. So remember that one. Carolina squeezing out the tough win. Next, we got the Buccaneers in Buffalo. Now, Buffalo, they just had their close win. didn't quite they almost won. They had a very close loss. They almost got to get it done, but they didn't get it done. They got a bad taste in their mouth, but I still think that they're going to do very good this year. I definitely got the new I got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going in there, and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going to lose that game. Coming up after that, we got a hometown game. Hometown for San Francisco, not hometown for me. But we got the hometown game of the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. Now, the Seahawks, as I've been saying, they're definitely going to be the breakout team this year. They are going to dominate, and I do mean dominate, the San Francisco 49ers, who had a good win. They had a lucky win, but a win's a win. They got it done. That's all they really needed to do. And that's kind of how it happened. They got their win, but I don't think it's going to go much further than that. The Seahawks are definitely going to pull this one out. Then you have Baltimore at San Diego. Now, San Diego, man, they're not looking hot this year. Just look at them. I mean, I don't want to talk down about my Raiders, because my Raiders played a very, very, very good game, even though they couldn't get the tough win at the end. But the Chargers should have absolutely dominated the Raiders. But it's a testament to how good the Raiders are and a testament to how bad the Chargers are. But they are going to be playing the Baltimore Ravens. That's going to be a very tough game for – hold on a second. So I got Zach Attack. I'm gonna get on the rest of these games in a second. And Baltimore is going to beat San Diego, by the way. The Zach Attack comes in the studio with a Saints hat. I'm sorry, is somebody on the bandwagon over here? Speak on it. Why, because they stole your quarterback? What?
No, because they've got my all-time favorite kicker who signed my hat.
Whatever. Jim Carney?
Carney, yeah.
All right, well, whatever. I mean, you know, I'd be pretty embarrassed to wear a Chargers hat also if they played the way they played this past weekend.
But even going against your advice and the Big Papa's advice, I still went into the black hole on Monday night wearing my Charger gear. Well, and I live to tell.
But this way is, Zach. Don't talk no stuff, won't be no stuff. You know, you didn't say anything. You know, you didn't come out of pocket. That's fine. Nothing happened. Rightfully so. So I definitely got Baltimore is going to win this week as they go against San Diego. And we got a good matchup on paper, or what sounds good, but I don't think it's going to be very good. We got the Steelers playing, and they're going to be playing the Bears. I don't think it's going to be a very good game. I got the Steelers definitely dominating that game. Then we got Cleveland. The Browns are going to be in Denver against the know-nothing. Terrible, terrible, and I mean terrible Broncos. The Broncos are not a good team this year. They got a lucky win. They got a lucky tip last week. The Cleveland Browns are going to squeeze out this win. It's going to be a close one, and it's going to be a pretty boring, bad game, but they're definitely going to win. And then you got the New York Giants, the Sunday night football game. You got the New York Giants and the Dallas Cowboys in an NFC East matchup. I definitely got the Giants to tear this up. Now, just because Tony Romo had his career best, he had his 3 touchdowns, his 353 yards. That was against a very, very weak Tampa Bay secondary. You got him stepping up against the New York Giants. That ain't going to happen again. The Giants are going to dominate this game. And then the Monday night game, Indianapolis at Miami. Miami is definitely not the team they used to be, not the garbage joke of the league that they were, but Indianapolis is definitely going to win this game and dominate this game. Now, before I cut out and kick it on over to Big Papa Knockout, I got to talk about the best game of this upcoming week, and that's going to be my Raiders in Kansas City against the Chiefs. Now, Matt Cassell, he says he wants to play. He's coming off his leg injury. Will he play? I don't know. Either way, I'm not really worried about it. Brody Croyle, however you say his name. Yeah, either way, I'm not worried about it. I do believe, with all sincerity, and all honesty, I do believe that the Oakland Raiders are definitely going to win this game against a very bad, beleaguered Kansas City Chiefs. They're going to go into Arrowhead Stadium, and they are going to pull out their victory. The Jamarcus Russell, he doesn't really need to worry about staying thrown to his receivers. Just give it to the backs, and give it to the tight end, Zach Miller. And so what I'm about to do is I'm about to wrap it up right now. I'm about to kick it on over to Charles, the Big Papa Knockout, and I'm about to roll out on this one right here. Much love from the Brutal Honest Truth. This is Gorgeous Greg. Remember to check it out Thursdays, 2 to 3, Kendall Sports, KENDALL Sports.blogspot.com. Check it out. Show your boy some love. Kendall Sports,